Falcoholic podcast listeners, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live. This is your host, Kevin Knight, here to remind you that you can join us live on YouTube for our Wednesday night shows, which are at 8:10 p.m. Eastern every single week, and also immediately following Falcons games for our post-game shows. Also, want to remind you guys to check out our Patreon page, which you can find at patreon.com/falcoholiclive if you'd like to support the show and unlock some exclusive perks, including high-quality ad-free versions of the live video show, including the Wednesday show, and also starting now, exclusive episodes of our post-game show in podcast format, as well as some other cool perks like exclusive Falcons Q&A sessions with the crew and some cool guests. Also want to remind folks to check out the community Discord server, which you can find a link to on our YouTube page. You can hang out there and chat with fellow fans of the Falcons on game day and otherwise, and that's a lot of fun. Thank you guys once again for tuning into the show, and we hope you enjoy this episode. Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 174 of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin on Twitter, joined by two great guests for our show tonight. First of all, making his first ever appearance on the program, we have Jake Gordon of Sports Talk ATL. He's at Can't Guard Jake on Twitter. Jake, welcome to the show, and how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. You know, it's definitely, you know, we were talking about it before the show. Sometimes I feel like I like the off season more than the regular season. So this is my time to shine.
Yeah. And particularly, you know, when we are forced to deal with the regular seasons that the Falcons are subjecting us to, it's an easy call, because in the off season, hope springs eternal. In the regular season, we have to deal with the Falcons actually playing. And usually that goes not quite as well as it seemed it would in the off season, unfortunately. We also have with us the Falcoholic himself. He is Dave Choate joining us. Dave, how are you doing this evening?
Great, and I agree. It's nice to have a ton of hope in the off season. You can talk yourself into almost anything, and let's do that tonight. Let's talk ourselves into the Falcons winning this division. Let's do it.
Exactly. Well, you know, we have to obviously get to some news that's very important to Falcons fans and, you know, NFC South enjoyers in general. But we will also be talking about free agency for the most part, getting into the salary cap situation, priority guys to re-sign, maybe some targets, and then getting into some Senior Bowl talk. If you guys haven't seen it on the site, I've started putting out just a litany of Senior Bowl previews, getting into some prospects to watch, wrapping up my initial film watch on like 40 guys, which has been a whirlwind over the past couple weeks, that's for sure. So I know you guys are enjoying that. We'll get to some of that later in the show too. I know the fundraiser says it's minus 23 hours to go on the Senior Bowl fundraiser, but you know, you can blame me for that because I said it for today, you know, because this was the last show before, but didn't realize that meant like at midnight today. So like technically, you know, just ignore that. It's still going on. You guys still have through today. And you know, if you donate while I'm at the Senior Bowl, you know, I'll accept that as well. So don't feel too bad. But George Costanza is matching all donations as well. And yeah, I mean, you guys have been terrific. We're 75% of the way there already. And if you guys got draft takes, you can find the link to donate. It's in the show description. I believe it's just streamlabs.com/thefalcoholic, but you can always check the show description if you're not sure. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Now let's get to the takes. Sean Payton retires from the Saints. It was a great day for the memes, for Falcoholic Matt, who I know has been just itching to write that Sean Payton retirement story for so long. I'm glad he was finally able to unleash it upon us. Dave, I'll let you get the first crack at this, because I know you're smiling a lot here as well. Just, you know, it was surprising that how quickly it sort of came about. It's surprising that it actually happened, and it's big in its implications for the NFC South, but what's your sort of instant reaction to Sean Payton's retirement?
I laughed a lot. That was great. the fun part about yesterday, really, for me, was just, you know, angry Saints fans all over Falcons fans being like, what are you celebrating for? 21-9 record, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, none of that matters. He's gone now. He can't hurt us anymore until he winds up somewhere else. And,
yeah. You
know, I hate Sean Payton. Whatever respect I might have for him as a coach or whatever, like, that goes out the window because he coached for the Saints for so long. We were on the wrong end of so many things with him. So seeing him go and abandon this franchise in a time of great need when they're $75 million, you know, over the cap, and they have a tight end at quarterback. Like, that's wonderful. That just fills my heart with joy. So I hope that, you know, it goes just as poorly as you think it will for New Orleans next year, and that the Falcons sweep them and we can rub it in all year. I'm just really excited about this. It's going to be great.
Yes, you know, I famously predicted that the Falcons would now win the division at 9-8 next year. So, you know, let's just maybe that's aiming too low. I don't know. I think I would be satisfied with that. But, you know, we got a long way to go. We got a long way to go.
We
got to
get Brady out of here, too.
Yeah. We're working on that. We're working on that. But, Jake, same question to you. What was your sort of feeling about Sean Payton announcing his retirement from the Saints?
I just had this same grin on my face all day yesterday. I was just smiling, looking at my phone, Saints fans cussing me out, saying the worst things. And I'm just smiling. I know you're so mad. Like, you can't not be. I know you're furious. And on top of the Brady retirement, what we really need, we need Mickey Loomis to just walk out the door right behind him. And that would be, ooh.
Chef's kiss. Yeah. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
It's really a mess, and we knew this was going to happen eventually. Like, last year they were in a like technically worse cap situation where they were like $111 million under, but they had a lot more routes to clear cap last year, a lot more contracts to restructure, a lot more players they could extend and the like, and they did. You know, they pretty much maximized and went all in again. The options this year are not quite as good. So I know there's a lot of Saints fans that were like, oh, we got out of even worse situation last year. I'm like, well, you sort of exhausted all your good options last year and you made it worse. Like, yeah, the number's lower, but it's really just as bad, if not worse. Like, there's some serious questions that have to be answered. There's a lot. Normally, the players with the huge cap hits that you want to get rid of, like the Andrus Peets, the Michael Thomas, you know, that didn't play this year, they can't be cut. They can't be moved. You know, there's not really much you can do with them except restructure them. And these are the players you probably want to get rid of because they're underperforming. So a restructure obviously doesn't help them at all. So it's really going to be glorious to see, you know, what they have to do to sort of solve this problem. And Mickey Loomis is one of the best at doing it. You know, give him credit. He's managed to keep him above water this long, but it sort of all came to a head this year when the depth, they had to got a lot of their depth to get under, and it was still a good roster on paper, but we saw, you know, when they lost a couple of key players, they were just not special anymore. And I think that's sort of what they are now. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to that as well. Obviously we're still waiting on Tom Brady news. I guess Gronk was saying he's leaning towards retirement right now as well. So this division could look a lot different in a couple of months. There's a lot of potential for a shakeup here with the Falcons being sort of the last man standing. So I'm excited to see how that goes. But as this is a Falcons show, we're going to continue moving more towards Falcons discussion. And speaking of the salary cap, the Falcons are not exactly in a terrific cap situation themselves. They're currently a little bit negative. I can pull up my notes here on that, but, in general, the team is not awful in terms of the cap. They're definitely much better than they were last year. They're fairly close to being sort of where they need to be in terms of the roster. They've got 51 players signed right now. They're effectively, well, technically they're $5.6 million over the cap. Effectively, they're $11.5 over, but that might sound like a lot. It's not really a crisis considering that the Falcons could basically just say goodbye to a couple of players and free up almost all of that just by making a few easy cuts. There's a lot of potential, obviously, for trades and things like that, which we're going to get into. But I figured any free agency discussion has to start with the salary cap because that's where we're going to determine, you know, what sort of players we can actually get. So let's talk about the players that could possibly be cut to save a significant amount of money. Obviously, Tyler Davison is one of the first ones to come to mind. He would save $3.8 million, only cost the team $1.2 in terms of dead cap. Not an easy trade-off there, considering he played less and less as the year went on. Another guy, Mike Davis, saves $2.5 million. And then the third one that I think is sort of a no-brainer is Kendall Sheffield, who saves a whopping $2.5 million with only $189K in dead cap. So Jake, I'll go to you first on this one. Do you think those are all sort of easy cuts that they're going to make, or will they consider keeping any of those guys?
Yeah, I think Davison is an easy one. You know, that was a big position to need, and he still wasn't getting very much burn this year. I think that's pretty obvious. Sheffield, I kind of thought they were going to cut him last year when he got hurt, and then they put him on IR. So I don't know. Maybe they like him, or maybe they just needed the body, and now they're going to cut him whenever the cap hits or the dead cap hit. Isn't it bad? Mike Davis, I kind of think Mike Davis got a raw deal. Mike Davis was not as terrible as I think he was made out to be sometimes. Yeah. He was often running uphill. But, I mean, it's a business, and the money's there, and they have Kadri Allison. They have draft picks. There's, I mean, even Wayne Gallman. Like, you can go back and get Wayne Gallman again, I guess, if you want. So I think all three of those guys are pretty safe bets to be cut.
Yeah, it's tough for Mike Davis because I feel like he is probably worth that contract. But for a team that really is sort of up against it in terms of the cap, that you just have to think that they're going to say, we can probably draft someone at a fraction of the cost and save and take that money and spend it on a position that we really need a better producer at. And particularly if they're going to re-sign Patterson. I guess if the Patterson deal doesn't work out, maybe they lean more towards keeping Davis, because at that point they're spending basically nothing at running back at all. But that'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. Dave, your thoughts on those sort of cut candidates or anyone else that you might be thinking of?
Yeah, I think Sheffield and Davison probably are both no-brainers. You know, Davison, it was kind of a surprise when he was inactive a couple of times late in the year, but they can pretty affordably re-sign guys who were playing over him most of the season. And, you know, so that to me is a no-brainer. Sheffield, I think cornerback is one of the positions where they'll attack it in the offseason. They have some good young depth, so I'm comfortable with that. Davis, I go back and forth on. You know, as Jake said, I think he got kind of a raw deal. I'm obviously a Mike Davis fan. I wrote a article that aged really poorly about what a good fit he was for this team. And I think maybe they'll ask him to, you know, take a look at his contract a little bit, change some money around. I think they would rather keep him personally. I think if they believe the run blocking is going to get better this year, the offense is going to get better, he's valuable enough, especially if you are not necessarily going to get Patterson back, which I'm not sure they're going to, that you won't cut him outright. You just might try to address it and free up a little bit of money in a different way. So to me, he's the only one where there's a question mark, but all those guys, you know, feel like decently safe bets to go while this team tries to figure out their cap situation.
Yeah. And I think it's sad because I think Davis is pretty well liked. And I think we all thought he'd sort of have a better season than he ended up having. And I think he could still have a good season. It's just so hard to sort of justify that 3.5 million cap hit, especially if you're going to go sign Cordarrelle Patterson, who's going to be probably your big money guy at running back. And it's such a replaceable position. You know, teams are out there, you know, Deontay Foreman, you know, let Falcons sign him in training camp, cut him, and he was basically the Titans starter and a good one too for like half the season. So it's just a position where you just can't really justify spending unless you have a really special player. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons, and we'll get to the re-signings too with Patterson, but, you know, I think you only really spend that money if you have a special talent, and someone like Patterson obviously gives you more than just a running back. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that. So those are the three cuts that I think are the easiest to make. There may be some other decisions out there, like Keith Smith saves him $1.3 million. I don't really think it's worth it. I think Keith Smith is a good fullback. He's good on special teams. You know, I think that just creates a hole to save very little money. I think you're not really getting much of an upgrade on Keith Smith's roster spot with that $1.3 million. So I feel like that's unlikely. You know, there's not really much else in terms of good savings out there. I mean, unless you're talking about crazy stuff, like trying to cut Grady Jarrett or something, which we know is never going to happen. That's not going to happen. So it's not really, you know, anything to talk about there. But the next thing we could talk about are trades, because those are potentially a good way to free up a significant amount of money. You know, the veteran cuts that we talked about save about $8.8 million, which would almost be enough to get the Falcons back to even. But the big name, and you know, we have to talk about it, is Calvin Ridley. You know, his cap hit is $11.1 million. It's fully guaranteed on the fifth-year option. There's no scenario where the Falcons would ever cut him. But a trade could be in the works if the two sides decide that that's what's best for them, if the offer is good enough. And it would save the Falcons that entire $11.1 million, because it's all base salary. not any prorated bonuses. So it's a good way to clear cap. If the offer is good enough, I think the Falcons would consider it, but I don't think they necessarily want to make the trade. But what about you, Dave? What is your sort of thoughts on Calvin Ridley's situation at this point? Obviously, we don't have any insider information, just sort of going with our gut on this one.
Yeah, you know, I will still say, and I always feel like I'm punting when I do this, but I don't know anything about what's going on with Calvin Ridley. I think it's all kind of hearsay. I respect Mike Garofalo and Steve Wyche a lot. I think they're both really good reporters. I think they must have, you know, some hunches and some information that makes them think that a trade might be on the win. But like for me, I don't know that that's the case, right? So to me, I think if Ridley does want to move, if like the two sides think it's the right move, I think they'll have no shortage of suitors for Calvin Ridley, you know, on what is a very affordable 1-year pact, you know, with a very little risk if it doesn't work out beyond this year. So I think if they do agree that it's the right move, they'll have no trouble moving him. Certainly the cap savings will be appealing. It's just then you have to start over completely at wide receiver and you'll have lost two, you know, really tremendous talents at the position in back-to-back years, which is not good. You know, you're going to be hard pressed as the Falcons to fill that void this year. So my hope is still that, you know, whatever is going on with Ridley, that he's able to come back and wants to come back to Atlanta this year. They have him on the deal. They can work something out after the season. So that's my preference, my hope. And I'm not, you know, I would like to say that that's going to happen, but I really don't know one way or the other. I think it's just what they settle on is the right move ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to predict, and I know there's a lot of takes out there about it, but you know, I'm looking at it from a purely business, you know, standpoint. And I think that's what we're trying to do here because we don't really have any details to sort of suss out any ill will there might be or any other stuff going on. I mean, we have no information on that. So we sort of have to look at it from more of a business-like angle. And, you know, you could certainly see the appeal of doing the trade. And also it would be nice to just have Calvin Ridley on the team too. So a lot of questions to answer there. Jake, what's your sort of thoughts on the Calvin Ridley situation right now?
With all due respect to whatever Calvin's going through, obviously, it's all speculation, but it's gotten to the point to where people are talking about it. So, you know, that's pretty baseline. I think if somebody offers you a pick in the top 47, let's say first round and a half, and that's the best offer you get, I wouldn't blink. I would do it. And really, even if he wasn't going through the situation, I would still strongly consider that just because there are way more needs on this team. I love Calvin. He's one of my favorite players. I have his jersey. But if he truly does want out and the team can get a good draft pick for him, I think it just makes sense, especially when you consider the money that's saved. It's not like a Julio Jones situation. And then maybe like an Alan Lazard or a DJ Chark or even both of those guys in free agency, two cheap options, you know, bigger guys that can block. I think he can be replaced. Obviously, it's much harder to replace Julio Jones or what he brings to the field, at least. But if that's truly what he wants, and if the speculation is true, then I think the organization should do right by him if they can get the right return for him.
Yeah, and I think that's the bigger question is, you know, does the offer come in that's good enough? Because Fontenot has to be really careful about getting, you know, this reputation of a guy who just lets disgruntled players leave, you know, for peanuts, you know, because I think some people still think the Falcons got bad return for Julio. And I think, you know, considering Julio's struggles this year, you know, it seems like they got pretty good compensation considering what he provided to the Titans. But, you know, two receivers potentially asking to be traded in two seasons, you know, I feel like Calvin Ridley he sort of has to set the precedent of like, okay, we can't really budge and give up a premium pick for, you know, we can't really give up a premium pick. Like, you're gonna have to come with a good offer, and which is why I've been adamant that it's gonna be a first, and I don't think they'll take anything less. But, you know, we've got a lot of offseason left. We don't really know what sort of discussions are going on, what the situation is, so that's still very much up in the air. But I think the general feeling is that the trade probably will happen. So we'll just, and the other aspect of it is like, you lose Calvin Ridley, which is, you know, a potential top 12 wide receiver in the NFL in the right situation, but you do gain $11 million and you hopefully get a first round pick in here. So there are some trade-offs there, but you got to nail the pick to make it worthwhile at the end of the day. You know, you can't blow the pick because then it doesn't work out. But that's the one main trade. The other main one that I think the team would be considering is Deion Jones, because he is making an enormous amount in terms of his cap hit this year. And he just, I don't think he's really the type of linebacker that Dean Pees wants, to be honest. Which is odd considering they restructured him and made his contract even less movable. But he didn't seem to really thrive in the new system. Obviously it was his first year in this different system, but, I just don't think it's a great fit for him. I think he's still a good linebacker that's going to have suitors that, that want his skill set. You know, a coverage linebacker is a great piece for a lot of players, like a lot of teams. And I think Deion Jones going to like a defense that's pretty much done, that just needs sort of an impact playmaker in there, I think he'll look a lot better in that sort of unit where he's not one of the best players on the unit. Instead, he's like one of many. I think he'll look a lot better in that system, and I think he will have suitors. But, you know, the question is, with teams knowing that the Falcons need to move him for cap relief, and they need to move him by basically, you know, the first couple days of the league year, I don't think the compensation is going to be great in terms of the pick. But the good news is the Falcons do save I think it's like $9.3 million by trading him. Just a regular pre-June 1st trade, which is nothing to shake a stick at. You know, they do have to eat that $10 million. In terms of dead cap, but they do get out of all of his contract. You know, they're completely have him off the books for next year. And that's not, you know, an insignificant amount of savings. So even if they only get like a fifth round pick for him, the savings is worth it in my opinion. But Jake, I'll let you get the first crack at this one. Do you think Deion's likely to be traded as well? What's your thoughts on that sort of move?
Man, I hope so. I know it sounds a little brash, but you know, I'd really take whatever I could get for him at this point. You know, maybe we see Dan Quinn go to Chicago or Denver, two very good defenses. And, you know, there's linebackers there. There's Roquan Smith. I think AJ Johnson is still in Denver. And he can be that complimentary piece over there. And I mean, if you come away with a fourth or a fifth round pick, I think that's a win for both sides. You know, he gets to play in a system that's better suited to him. Like you mentioned, on a more complete defense, maybe reunite with Dan Quinn. Those are just some possibilities. I don't know if Dan Quinn can even get a head coaching job, but you know, it's something up that avenue. And, you know, a fourth or fifth round pick, this roster, they need bodies. And you save the money, you get the pick, and you can spend that money elsewhere. And you go, it inches you closer to having a more complete team, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a move that I would probably prioritize even over Ridley in terms of importance to get done soon. You know, with Ridley, obviously it would be nice to have it done early so you could use the money early in free agency, but if it had to be later, it wouldn't be a big deal. Like I think it's more important to get the right compensation in terms of the draft. With Deion, I think you sort of take what you can get because it's all about the cap space and it's time sensitive too. So I don't think the Falcons' leverage with that trade is going to be great, so they're probably looking at like a, you know, I would hope it would be a little earlier on day three in terms of like fourth, fifth round, but they probably can't be too picky there. But Dave, what do you think about the possibility of the Deion Jones trade going down?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, Jones, it would have to be a really drastic turnaround for him next year to, you know, not look like he did in 2021, which at times was abysmal. I mean, we were all seeing the lowlights posted on a weekly basis. We were all seeing him miss tackles. And so to me, if you can get him a better landing spot, he may want that first of all. I don't know for sure, obviously, but the Falcons should probably want that, especially because, in my opinion, they've got a guy in Michael Walker who's ready to step in and get that opportunity. You know, whether or not he thrives in it, he's going to cost you a fraction of what Deion Jones will, and he can't really be worse on a snap-to-snap basis than Jones was this year. And it's kind of crazy that we're in this situation with Deion Jones because of, you know, how good he was in the past, but to me, yeah, if you can get that mid-round pick, if you can find a good landing spot for him, if you've got, you know, a plan for Michael Walker, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. You know, I think my preference would be to re-sign Foye, probably. I mean, I think over the cap had him around $8 million a year in terms of his value, which seems like a lot. But again, you know, we'll see what sort of offers he gets. But, you know, I think it will probably cost that if they want to keep him. And I would rather have Oluokun at this point. I think he's a better fit for this defense. The good thing about linebacker, and we'll talk about it when we get to the Senior Bowl, is this is a stacked class. Like this, there's a lot of great guys in this class. A lot of guys you can, you know, linebacker is one of those positions you can get good starters. you know, third round, fourth round, fifth round. Like, routinely teams find starters at linebacker in the mid rounds of the draft. This is not a position where you're, you know, like edge, where it's like you're looking for those top guys, and you know, there's, it's few and far between these mid round hits come in. And you know, generally you can sign free agent linebackers to sort of fill in, and it's sort of a, the solid starters, there's a lot of them, but like impact guys, not so much. But I, you know, so we'll see how that goes. But you know, if the Falcons do these two moves, say they trade Ridley, they trade Deion, they could save $20.5 million right there. So that would get them immediately back under the cap and free up, you know, almost $20 million to spend, which might sound like a lot, but you know, we got a lot. That's not really a lot. Trust me, guys. It might sound like a lot, but it's not. Two other trades that I'll just mention. I don't think either one's particularly likely, but I just think they're worth mentioning as distant possibilities. Grady Jarrett is one. They could save $16.5 million and probably get really premium compensation for Grady Jarrett. He's in the prime of his career. He's on an affordable contract right now. And I mean, he's a great player. So I think you would be getting potentially great compensation for him. But I think if you trade Grady Jarrett, you have nothing on the defensive line, like at all, like you have nothing. And it's basically committing to like a full defensive rebuild, probably committing to a full team rebuild at that point, which brings me to the next player, which would be Matt Ryan. A trade of Matt Ryan before June 1st doesn't save a lot, saves $8.13 million, and you have to eat 40. So, you know, it does provide net savings technically. So it does potentially give the team $8 million in savings, but, you know, the good thing about a pre-June 1st trade of Matt Ryan is if this team was going for a full rebuild, which I think is unlikely, but they might decide they want to do that still. I mean, we don't know. That all of Ryan's cap would be off the books after this year. So they'd sort of eat it, and then they would be done. You know, they'd essentially be done with it right now. So that would be rough to deal with, certainly, but that's a potential move if they go for the full teardown, which I don't necessarily agree with, but yeah, we'll see. So if they were to do all of those moves, they could save up to $45 million from those trades, but those last two I just don't think are particularly likely. What I do think is more likely is, with Matt Ryan's contract, a restructure where they add void years, which is what the Saints have been doing for a while. Terry Fontenot's familiar with it. They did it with Dante Fowler this year. They sort of got him to take a pay cut and added a void year, which is why some people still think Dante Fowler's on the roster. He is not. He is not on the roster, folks. He is only listed because he actually has a cap hit. He has a $4.6 million prorated bonus still. But if you check, he has no base salary. And folks, if you have no base salary, you're not on the roster. There's literally no way you can have zero base salary and be on the roster ever. So if you ever see a player listed with zero base salary, they're not on the team. It's a void year. So just so you guys know, there seems to be some confusion about that out there. Dante Fowler's not on the roster, so don't have to worry about that. But what a void year restructure could possibly do to Ryan is could spread out. If you just restructure Ryan again, you save a little bit of money this year, but you just make it incredibly bad next year, which isn't really fixing anything. If you do a void year restructure, you basically add fake years to the contract that allow you to spread out the bonus money. The Falcons could save up to $11.3 million by doing that. If they maxed it out, I don't know that they would, but you know, it's a possibility. So that's one way you could save some money. The other way would be with Grady Jarrett, instead of a trade, would be to extend him, which would be a priority for me, because I think you want him here as a part of this team long term. You need a piece to build around the defensive line. He's one of the best you could possibly hope for. And by extending him, the Falcons could actually save over $12 million on his cap hit this year. If they maxed it out, I don't think you go all in to max it out, but that's the possibility. So Dave, I'll let you sort of weigh in. You know, what do you think about those sort of moves in terms of a Ryan restructure? They could also consider extending Ryan. That's another option we didn't talk about. And then what they do with Grady Jarrett. You have any thoughts on those sort of moves?
Yeah, the Jarrett thing is from a fan perspective, he's like my untouchable guy. I love Grady Jarrett. So, you know, if I set that aside, though, the possibility of getting some good compensation for him, you know, if you've got a free agent defensive tackle that you like, and you can free up $16 million in the last year of Grady Jarrett's deal, and you can get that deal done basically whenever you want, you know, they have to at least, I think about that move. And I never thought I'd hear myself say that, but I do think it's something that, you know, especially if they think they're going to have trouble re-signing him after this year, that they should really be considering. So I don't think it's very likely. I do think it's a move that they've at least thought about, probably will think about the rest of the offseason. With Ryan, you know, I said this to Aaron Freeman on the Locked On Falcons show yesterday. I think the Falcons just need to make a decision with him one way or the other. Like, to me, if you're building around Ryan for, say, the next 3 years, you got to give him that extension. You've got to give yourself some cap space the next couple of years, especially if you want to try to contend. Like, you know, Peyton walks away, Brady maybe walks away, and this division seems pretty wide open. You feel like you can prop that window open a little bit sooner, and you want to do it with Ryan, then let's get some money in here to play with and give him a better team. Otherwise, I think, you know, yeah, the restructure with a void year is potential. I think just sitting here and kind of eating his cap space this year, knowing that you can move on next year or his contract's up in 2024, to me seems like the two logical options. It's really just a question of, you know, is Matt Ryan your bridge guy for one more year, or are you really sincere about him, you know, playing until he's almost 40 or even 40 and being at the helm of the offense? And I think that's just kind of the decision ahead of them. I still think ultimately they must be leaning toward keeping him for the next couple of years, but I guess we'll see what they do with his contract.
Yeah, that does seem to be the buzz so far. So we'll see what actually happens with that. I mean, I think if it's funny because it's like, if you wanted to trade Ryan, you would basically do the exact same thing they're doing now, which is say, like, we want to keep him. You know, like, oh yeah, he's part of our long-term future. Like, you would want teams to be calling you to say, oh, we want Ryan. So it's like, oh, well, we don't want to get rid of him, so you got to give us more, you know, in terms of compensation. So, you know, you never know what to parse from these public comments, but I certainly don't think they're trying to move him or move on from him this season. There's just not a lot of upside to it. But I think, would they consider trade offers? Probably, but what we'll have to see. Yeah, Jake, what do you think about you know, the possibility of touching Ryan and Grady Jarrett's contracts and their sort of future with the team?
Yeah, obviously, I would love for Grady to be extended. You know, he's held in high regard in this locker room, and I don't think that they would, because they can restructure him without his permission. But I think that with his standing as a member of this organization, I just don't think that's going to happen. That would be kind of insulting. And with Matt, I'm on the fence because I do firmly believe every man has a price. There's very few players that don't. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, they don't have a price. Matt Ryan, if somebody calls, say Pittsburgh calls, because this is not a good quarterback class for the draft, at least not in my opinion, not a lot in free agency. Yeah, it's a record-setting cap hit, but if somebody offers you a first-round pick and you really got a chance to hit the reset button, you've already potentially traded Calvin Ridley, already potentially traded Deion Jones, it's something to think about. And, you know, it gives Matt potentially an opportunity to compete somewhere else, as we've watched him get slaughtered for 3 years in a row now, pretty much. It really just depends on the return. I'm not really in favor one way or the other. I see both sides of the coin. But I definitely don't think when you know, they made the public comment, so we're committed to Matt for this year. And then Arthur Smith kind of walked that back a little bit and said, we're not going to back ourselves into a corner. I don't think they know either, but I do agree with Dave. They got to make a decision one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah, and that will probably be something they decide on soon, because if they're, you know, wanting to move Ryan, they either have to do it before the start of free agency or after June 1st. Because once the third day of free agency hits, he gets like an $8 million roster bonus, and then you sort of have to wait. So, you know, we'll have to see. I don't necessarily know what they're going to do yet. I think all paths are open. You know, I think this team is maybe not as, I think they, after evaluating this season and seeing the state of the roster and everything, you know, I think it's not unlikely that they do look and see, like, you know, maybe this is more of a rebuild than we were initially thinking. Maybe, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with, like, Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. I know Robert Kelly was asking about it in the chat, Nico was asking about it. You know, with those two guys, we don't know if they're going to be on the market. And if they are, you know, Ryan's interest will probably be a lot lower. But if they aren't, you know, I think there's everybody thought Aaron Rodgers was going to get traded last year. He doesn't get traded. Russell Wilson has not really intimated that he wants to leave Seattle at this time. You know, we'll see what happens. But if those two guys don't get on the market, don't get put out there, Ryan might be the best guy available at that point. And teams do, you know, crazy things when they're desperate for quarterback, especially someone like Pittsburgh, not really in range of one of these top prospects in a pretty weak quarterback class to begin with. And you know, they might say like pick 20 for Matt Ryan. The team trading for Ryan would get his contract at a much cheaper rate. They would only owe Ryan, I think, like 20-something million this year and $23 million next year, which is very affordable for a franchise quarterback. They obviously have the flexibility to extend him for a couple of years if they need more savings. And I think while Ryan had a down year by his standards, it's clear that he's not, like, washed or anything. Like, he's very, I think, on a team that didn't have one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL, he'd be just fine. He'd probably give you better play than Ben Roethlisberger did, for sure. So, you know, a team that's desperate to compete right now, like maybe the Steelers, you know, a team like the Browns is sort of a dark horse. If they're like, look, Baker Mayfield's not going to get us there. We have a win now roster. Let's just trade our, you know, mid to late first for Ryan and we'll, you know, move on and see if we can get this done. So there's options out there for that. I think the most likely thing is still that he gets, you know, a void year restructure and we sort of, he finishes out his contract. But we will, we'll see what happens there. Because that's one of the most interesting storylines of this offseason. I think we're just sort of scratching the surface of the depths that this team will go to and how they sort of handle things. Will, you know, it could be complete tear down and rebuild all the way to make a few adjustments and just try to, you know, still kind of win with this roster. It's just totally up in the air, and that's why it's so exciting at this time of year. We know nothing, and it's all speculation, which speculation's more fun than reality most of the time, unfortunately. But, you know, let's just go in with this mock sort of offseason that we're conducting. Say the Falcons do restructure Matt Ryan and extend Grady Jarrett. You know, at that point, with those cuts that we talked about with the Ridley and Deion Jones trade and those two moves, we're looking at the Falcons possibly adding another first-round pick, getting an extra day three pick probably from Deion Jones, and freeing up $52.9 million in cap space from those moves. Now, effectively, that would give them $42.8 million, considering they still have to, like, pay off their existing debts. And I would probably lean more to it being like closer to $35 million, because I think it would be sort of irresponsible to just max out the restructure and max out the extension savings, because that's just going to hurt you down the road. And I don't think they necessarily have to go that hard. So that would leave them with $35 million to re-sign free agents and sign outside free agents, which is, it's much better than last year. We'll say that. It probably sounds like a lot. It's really not, but it is enough to probably re-sign some of their priority guys and have something to play around with in terms of outside guys, aside from just the bare minimum signings, which was basically what they did last year. So let's start. Jason Gaines, I did see your tip. Thank you. We will get to that in just a minute. Want to wrap up this free agency talk before we move on. But yeah, Jake, looking at the Falcons free agents, you know, are obviously we've mentioned a couple names like Patterson, Aluakun. Who are the guys that you're really hoping that the team does find a way to bring back at this point?
I'm going to make DW proud. And I'm going to say Isaiah Oliver. He's not number one on my list, but Isaiah Oliver was playing well. I think he had finally settled into that role. I always compared it in Dean Pease's defense to what Logan Ryan used to do for him. And obviously Oliver's not that level of a player, but he was playing well. And you know, you can even include Fabian Moreau in that conversation, which I don't think Fabian Moreau was nearly as bad as he was made out to be a lot of times.
Yes. Thank
you. But if Isaiah Oliver's healthy, you know, a prove it deal, hopefully, or even just like, you know, an inexpensive 2 or 3 year deal. I would love to see Isaiah Oliver back. And that's not something I really thought that I would be saying maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, I totally agree. He was having a great season in the slot. He looked like a totally different player. He looked way more comfortable inside where he could sort of use his, I always projected him as an outside guy because his length is terrific. And he's got great size for corner, but he was just a little bit too, he just wasn't good at sort of keeping up with those dynamic outside guys. It seems like in the slot, he was really able to use his eyes more, to use his length as a run stuffer, and to match up with some of these bigger slots that we're seeing these days in these tight ends. And I think he just had a, he just found his niche finally, the spot that worked out for him. And he had that injury, which sucks for him, because I think he would have been lined for a huge payday potentially, if he had, you know, finished out the year at that pace. But it sort of could be a blessing in disguise for the Falcons in that I think they can re-sign him for probably a minimal amount if they want. I might do like what you were saying, Jake, and sort of offer him a 2 or 3 year deal at like a $3 to $4 million per, which is, you know, you're sort of paying for the potential. You're offering him that security of a 3 to 4 year deal, with the hopes that he's going to play well and outperform that deal. And if he's, you know, if he plays like he did at the beginning of the season this year, then you're, it's a total bargain. But if, you know, he's hurt, then you lose a little bit of money there. But I think that's sort of, I think that that's a risk I would take, because I think his upside, he was looking good, and it wasn't just a one game thing. It was like a 4 game sample size. I think we were, that's enough to convince me that I think he can do it. So I like that a lot. Dave, who are the guys you're sort of looking at as your priority re-signings for this team?
Yeah, Oliver is definitely one of them. I think Matt Gano is another one, for kind of the same reason. Obviously, he didn't get to play at all, but he's somebody whose talent I like a great deal. He will be, in my mind, probably fairly affordable coming off the injury, and could be the guy you want pushing Caleb McGarry at right tackle, and I think they have to get somebody to do that this offseason. So those are two of my guys. Obviously, I would bring back all of the restricted free agents, and I'd strongly consider trying to bring back both Gage and Aluakon. Myself, I think Aluakon's a good player. I think he did enough, especially toward the tail end of the season, to think that he's a good fit for this defense and can be an impact defender in it. I don't think the Falcons can, you know, trade away Jones and let him go and kind of restart with Walker and somebody else. I think that's not their preference. And I think depending on what Gage's contract demands are, you know, we tend to forget that, like, this guy had to carry a pretty heavy load this year. And certainly he didn't look good doing it in the first 8 or so games of the season, but he really turned it on. And ideally, if you have Ridley coming back, or you're sort of rebuilding this core and letting him settle in as a number two, number three receiver with Pitts also on the field, I think he can be really productive for you. So as long as, you know, the contracts aren't outlandish, I'm bringing all of those guys back.
Yeah, no, I like those names too. You know, my biggest one would probably be, like, I think you have to decide. I think you have to bring back one of these weapons, whether that's Russell Gage, whether that's Cordarrelle Patterson. You know, I think you have to bring back one of those guys, because I think if you don't, there's just not enough continuity. I think it's asking a lot for Matt Ryan. I mean, you have Kyle Pitts, but, you know, I think it's asking a lot for Ryan to basically go into next year with an entirely new receiving core and losing his most dynamic backfield weapon, going and just replacing them all. Like, you're not going to get good results out of that. You need some sort of continuity there. I guess to me, I'd lean towards Patterson, because I think he'll actually be cheaper. As crazy as that might sound, you know, Patterson will be 32, I believe, next year. He's only had 1 year of production. I just don't think the offers are going to be that astronomical for him. And if they were, they'd probably be a 1 year deal. That's a lot of money. You know, he might get like a 1 year, $8-9 million offer from some team. But I think if the Falcons offer him a 3 year, $6 million per deal, where they give him $18 million to 20, maybe add a little bit more in there, give him $20 million over 3 years. Give him that long-term security. You know, that look, at the end of that contract, is he still going to be worth that money? You know, I don't know. I think people forget, you know, Patterson, he is 32 and he is playing running back now, but he didn't play running back his whole career. He's mostly played wide receiver. So it's not like he's taken a huge amount of carries. He hasn't taken a huge amount of hits. He might last a little bit longer than normal because he does play that hybrid role. I would rather, you know, lean towards him than Gage, but I could also see Gage being the guy they choose to bring back. He really did evolve in this offense. He took a lot more snaps outside, which I didn't know if he could do or not. And that matters because this offense doesn't use a slot receiver that often. They prefer to go to two tight ends. And I think we'll see Arthur Smith, you know, emphasize getting another tight end as well. But the fact that he can play outside and be an impact player outside makes it much more interesting in terms of a re-signing, because when he was mostly a slot guy, I didn't think that they would do it. But now I think that there's a better chance of that. And then Aluakun, like, I would, that's the guy I would probably focus on defense as being the main guy I'd bring back, just because he's your defensive leader. If you're going to trade Deion Jones, I think you pay Aluakun, so you have that continuity back there. You've got Michael Walker, you add another guy in the draft, you bring back someone like maybe Brandon Copeland, you know, who's going to be cheap, provide that veteran presence. You know, we found out Brandon Copeland was basically playing on one leg all year. He's a solid guy. You know, he's not going to be this huge impact player, but, you know, if he's healthy this year, he's probably better than last year. So those are definitely the big names, the guys that I like. In terms of, like, smaller, I mean, obviously this isn't really smaller, but Younghoe Koo is one that we should probably talk about. Technically, Koo is a restricted free agent, so the Falcons have first dibs in terms of they could tender him. Since Koo was undrafted, they would, you know, the original round tender doesn't really protect him at all, so they wouldn't really use it, doesn't pay him much. So they'd really be probably looking at, like, the second round tender for Koo, for those that aren't familiar with how tenders work. Basically, a team trying to sign Koo would have to obviously beat the Falcons contract, because he's not going to leave for a lesser contract. So they have to beat the Falcons contract offer and send a second to the Falcons, which means they won't do it. Like, this teams almost never sign RFAs away. It's very difficult. I think the Saints tried to do it recently. I can't remember. But that was the last time I could remember. So I think if they were to do a second round tender on Koo, it would cost about $4 million. So that's an option if they don't want to negotiate. But I think the best move is probably giving him just a long-term extension. You could probably get him, you know, approximately $3 to $4 million per. That's like high-end kicker pay. And probably could get his cap hit lower this year if you wanted to. But, you know, Morstead too, the punter. I thought he was great. I would definitely bring him back. But a little special teams discussion here. Dave, what do you think about bringing back Koo and possibly Morstead as well?
Yeah, I do both. You know, there's some interesting punters out there this year in the market. Like, there's enough decent to good ones that if you do move on from Morstead, I think you'll be okay. I do think that Morstead seemed to embrace being here. It was nice to take one more thing away from the Saints, I guess, even if he technically didn't get taken away from the Saints. So I'd welcome him back with open arms. To me, Koo is a guy that you pretty much have to resign. I don't know, you know, ultimately whether you just use the second round tender this year or if you try to work out a long-term deal, but, you know, he showed by putting together the back-to-back years that he did that he's one of those rare, you know, really good, really consistent kickers, and he's still very young. And to me, you know, we've been super spoiled over the years between Matt Bryant and Koo to have great kickers. And I think we don't want to go back to not having great kickers, because that, especially for a team that doesn't have a lot going on right now and may not for a year or two, like, let's give ourselves a leg that can win you a game ultimately if you need to. So to me, Koo is absolutely a no-brainer. Hopefully, you know, it's a reasonable contract, but I think you just have to get that done.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. I think you don't create, like, we've got enough holes. Don't create new ones. Like, don't quibble over paying Koo $3 to $4 million a year. Just do it. Pay the man, you know? Just take care of that one. I think Morstead is not that old. He's 36. You know, he's getting up there, but punters routinely play into the late 30s. I mean, that's not unusual. And he was clearly not slowed down at all this year. So, I mean, I'd offer him like a 2-3 year deal. He's probably not going to be expensive. You know, he got cut by the Jets, for God's sake, which, lol, Jets. The guy that they played was not as good as Morstead, for the record. so, you know, say like, look, you did great. Come back for a couple more years. We'll pay you, you know, $2.5 million per. It's good punter money. Stick around, you know, stick it to the Saints twice a year. You know, all that good stuff. So, but yeah, Jake, any comments on those two or any other sort of like lower level guys you would be interested in bringing back?
Yeah, I mean, with Koo, you let Koo walk, you're stepping over dollars to pick up pennies. Easy decision. Punter, I mean, not as big of a deal. Of course, you got my guy, Jake Kamarda in the draft, Matarazia in the draft. out of San Diego State, which if you're not familiar with him, the guy
has
like multiple FBS punting records. He had like three punts that went over 80 yards or something this year.
Absurd.
So I think that's a better, if you want to explore alternate routes at either of those positions, I definitely think punter would be preferable to kicker.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, I've always, you know, thought that, I love Araisha. I feel like he's going to go on day two because teams are just going to be like, this dude's nuts. But I just, I can't see the Falcons doing that. But I mean, if he's around on day three, I mean, there's a BPA argument there for sure. So, I'm interested to see what happens there. Just a couple notable guys like Quadri Olison is an ERFA, which means that the Falcons can sign him at the vet minimum and he can't say no. So they're going to do that. A lot of people in the chat mentioned Anthony Rush. That's an easy one. I think you bring back Anthony Rush. He's an RFA. I don't think they need to tender him. I think you just sort of offer him like vet min, maybe a little bit more. But he's a good nose tackle. I mean, he was better than Tyler Davison at a fraction of the cost. I think you bring him back, you know, for 1 year and see what he's got. Maybe consider, you know, I wouldn't pay him too much because there's a chance, you know, if someone falls to you in the draft, you don't necessarily want to commit long-term to Rush in case you end up, you know, say they trade down and, you know, they want to take Jordan Davis. You know, maybe they trade down to 20 and Jordan Davis is there. You know, they should be able to take Jordan Davis if they want. You know, Travis Jones in the second, we'll talk about him. He's a Senior Bowl guy. You know, they could be looking to add a young nose tackle. I mean, Anthony Rush isn't old. He's like 26, but, you know, he's younger than me, so he can't be that old. you know, so I do think they'll want to keep some flexibility there, but that's one that I would prioritize. And then they just kind of have to make some decisions on these lower level guys. You know, Olamide Zaccheaus, I think, is someone you bring back just because I think he's a quality option, and they really don't have much in the wide receiver core. Tajay Sharp too. A lot of depth guys. You know, Fabian Moreau, I would consider bringing him back as well, just because if he's cheap. I mean, this is a pro Fabian Moreau show, so like, don't feel like you can't praise Moreau on this show because we're in on it. Like, that man got so smashed by targets because nobody wanted to throw it to Terrell, and like, he was not bad. Like, for a corner that was making basically vet minimum, Fabian Moreau, I think, acquitted himself well. I think he's probably best as like the first guy off the bench than like your permanent starter at cornerback too. But if they're gonna draft a rookie to potentially get in there, I think having someone like Moreau that you could depend on to not have to force a young guy in there, I think is smart. So I'm interested to see if they do bring him back as well. But that's sort of a preview of the Falcons guys. We should probably, you know, so if the Falcons bring back a couple guys, do whatever, you know, they might have $15 million, $10 million, $20 million, somewhere in that range to spend on outside free agents, depending on who they sign and for how much. So, Jake, are there any outside free agents that you're really sort of hoping that for them to add at this point? Obviously, it's super early. We don't know who's going to get re-signed, but
yeah, I've made it clear multiple times that I'm more interested in addressing the trenches in free agency than in the draft because I'm just tired of spending picks on the position. James Daniels is a guy who sticks out to me. Mark Lewinsky out of Indianapolis. There was another interior. Lakin Tomlinson's having a really good year out in San Francisco. But I think one of the most important things is I think they can sign a handful of inexpensive pass rushers. And I think that's where getting back to actually having a pass rush with a pulse is having, you know, some type of respectable depth. There's guys like DeMarcus Walker, Arden Key, Lorenzo Carter, another Georgia guy. I know, I'm sorry. And maybe even Derek Barnett if he's not too expensive. But I mean, sometimes you don't have to go get that guy. You just need a couple of guys who can actually do something, and then maybe you get your guy in the draft. Maybe you go get a Karloftis. You know, maybe you get, I don't think Kayvon Thibodeau will fall to eight, but maybe you get a Kayvon Thibodeau, and then you have a supporting cast behind him. That's how teams with good pass rushes are. You know, it's not just one guy. It's going to have to be signing a couple guys at low cost and hitting on some of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree for sure. Ray Moon with the $5. Did you guys talk about the Saints and that skid mark of a franchise? We did, Ray. We talked about it at the top. So I have to rewind after we finish. We definitely spent probably too long making fun of the Saints. But yeah, definitely. I like the guys you mentioned. You know, I think Ben Jones of the Titans is another one if they decide that they want to go for a veteran center. He's going to be expensive probably, but you know, you can't pay too much for a good center. Alex Mack showed this. Another like sort of under the radar guy would be like Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, formerly of the Chiefs, ended up going to the Jets late in the year, ended up starting, I think, late in the season. You know, he's played right guard, he's played left guard. I think, you know, he didn't look quite as good this year, but he took 2020 off because he's a doctor and wanted to work with COVID patients, so I don't really blame him for that. So you could get him on sort of a buy low contract, and I think he could outperform it. I think he could get back in form, and I think he'd be someone that's interesting. You know, I think Will Hernandez from the Giants never really lived up to his draft status, but I think, you know, he's only 27. I think he has potential. But yeah, James Daniels is the one that's I have circled because he could play center too. And he's definitely the top free agent. I sort of doubt the Bears let him leave, but if he hits the market, you know, I think if they do go in for one sort of like splash signing, that would be the guy that I have circled on the offensive line for sure. Dave, any free agents you're sort of looking at on the market right now?
Yeah, I like the idea of Daniels. One thing that I am not sure of and is keeping me up at night, maybe literally, is whether the Falcons are going to move on from Jalen Mayfield at left guard. I kind of feel like they feel invested in him. Like, I think it was telling that they just left him in there to sort of take his lumps over and over and over again, and they're counting on him to improve. So somebody like Daniels, who gives you, you know, a little bit of versatility, could take over at center if they're not sold on Hennessy. And I don't necessarily think they're sold on Dahlman taking over for him. I think that'd be a great signing, even if he's not going to be cheap. And I'd love to see them go out and get some competition too for right tackle for Caleb McGarry. I mentioned that if you bring Gano back, I feel pretty good about that. If not, maybe somebody like David Questenberry comes over and you try to give him that competition. But I think they really can't afford to go into the season with, you know, left guard, center, and right tackle barren of actual competitive options for the incumbent starters. I just don't think you can do that. So to me, those are the big priorities. And then, as has been my priority for, you know, a decade now, let's, you know, fix the pass rush as much as possible. And right. Part of that, to me, you know, it's ridiculous because I know it's not going to fix the pass rush, but I would love to see them bring in Justin Houston at last and correct.
Yes, finally. Yeah.
So yeah, it's time. So
it's time. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to see, you know, and I think the approach that Jake was talking about is the way to go is, you know, hopefully you can draft somebody, but I don't want to see another Fowler, another Ray Edwards, another, like, this guy is going to fix our pass rush when one guy isn't going to do it. And if you spend a lot of money on him and he isn't who you think he is, then you're in trouble. So, you know, do what you did last year, adding, you know, multiple players, hopefully with a lot more upside than the guys you added last year. And let's see where that takes them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the edge class in free agency is just not great. It never really is that great. You know, you always overpay for guys. I think like adding a sort of mid-level veteran like a Justin Houston, which is kind of what he is now in his career. He's still great. I mean, he's still capable of bringing that. But, you know, I think adding that veteran presence to what's probably going to be a very young edge group overall is important. I would like to see that. Houston, we've been clamoring for Houston here for an eternity, so I hope they finally make that work. I actually like the interior class better, and that's sort of a sneaky need for this team. You know, they're probably hoping that Marlon Davidson finally lives up to his promise, but I think it would be smart to not rely on that. But like, you know, Larry Ogunjobi of the Bengals just had an awesome season. He's going to be expensive, like $10 million a year probably. But if they go for like a splash signing, I like him better than the edge guys. I think, you know, if you can't get an elite edge and there's not an edge out there that you like, the edges are going to be way more expensive too. You know, go for an Ogunjobi to be that impact guy you add. You can get that pass rush from the inside too and just draft a bunch of guys on the edge and just say, you know, we'll fight it out. Someone like Daquan Jones, formerly of the Titans, played under Dean Pees. That's another potential nose tackle option. Very good nose tackle. Let's see, Malik. What is his last name? I can't remember now. I'm drawing a blank. But Malik Collins, a guy I've always thought was sort of underrated. He's sort of maybe a low cost addition. You know, somebody like a Jonathan Hankins, a really giant nose tackle, another, you know, guy who shouldn't be overly expensive. And somebody I liked coming out that was actually finally got on the field and sort of proved himself this year was Harrison Phillips of the Bills, another interior guy, sort of inside-outside flexibility. I like him, too, as maybe a sleeper, a guy that you could sign to maybe bolster you. And Justin Zimmer, too, you know, ex-Falcon. He had a great year for the Bills as well, so as like a rotational guy, so I wouldn't be opposed to bringing him back. But a lot of guys to get to, a lot of guys to look at, and we'll see. You know, a lot of these guys are going to get re-signed, too, so we'll see how that goes. But the edge is always such a crapshoot in free agency, so I feel like you're more likely to get value at defensive tackle, and I guess that's slightly where I'm leaning, but I'd probably focus more on the offensive line, like mostly the interior. Like, if we're going to, I don't think they should draft another interior guy, honestly. Like, I feel like you've drafted enough interior offensive linemen. Like, at a certain point, you have to develop somebody, and if you, and you're not going to draft, you know, drafting someone that's going to be an upgrade over the guys you got, it seems like it's going to take, it usually takes a little while for these guys to get going. So if you really want to upgrade the interior, you're going to have to sign somebody. And that would not surprise me if that's where they spend their big chunk of money, is on something like that. All right, before we move on to some Senior Bowl talk, let me get to some of these tips that came in. Thank you guys so much. If you want to donate, guys, all tips this month are going towards our Senior Bowl fund. We are, let's see, almost 77% of the way there. That's great. You guys have been killing it. And like, you know, if you want a tip next week too, it's okay. Like, I'll allow it. You know, I'm not going to like just cut it off tonight. It's fine. So don't feel like obligated, like everybody has to do everything tonight. But, you know, thank you guys so much for that. That support really means a lot. It's really helpful to me that I don't have to pay all of it out of pocket. I'm excited to get down there and get you guys some intel. But we got Ken Wood the second with the $3. Thank you so much, Kevin Wood. Excuse me. I should know how to say my own name. He says, I think keeping Oliver is a must. The secondary needs all the help it can get. We are really forming a nice young group with Terrell and Oliver, potentially adding someone like a Stingley or a Sauce Gardner. Plus, we have Richie Grant, Jalen Hawkins, who could be really nice at safety. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that this team is much closer to having a good secondary than a good front seven. So I think if they were to sort of do what you're saying and like just go all out to make the secondary good, at least you'd have a good secondary then. Like, you'd be like, okay, that's our team. Our identity is we have a great secondary, and we just sort of try to cobble together the pass rush. You know, that's at least something that has worked for some teams in the past. So that would not be something I would be opposed to at all. Or we got a couple from Jason Gaines, his first with $2. Jason, thank you so much. He says, last 2 weeks have been great. Dan Quinn and the Cowboys lose to the 49ers. Sean Payton leaves the Aints. The Bucks lose to the Rams. Brady may retire, hoping that the 49ers beat the Rams so that Shanahan can lose another Super Bowl. Man, Jason, not better at all, but I don't blame you. Don't blame me, Jason. But yeah, it has been a fun week for those rooting against the former Falcons coaches. You know, really, I have no ill will towards the Titans. I just wanted the higher draft pick. So, like, I'm sorry, Tennessee. I do appreciate you losing to help our draft pick out. But, you know, it's not personal. Oh yeah, Jason says, also wanted to add that I enjoyed watching Sean Payton choke in multiple playoff games over the last couple years. My favorite Payton memory was in 2017 versus the Falcons when he ran on the field and got that unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, which ended up sealing the Falcons' win. So, fond Sean Payton memories. We should have a show dedicated just to fond Sean Payton memories.
I'll get my Sarah McLachlan CD. We'll get it going.
Got to see if we can get Kevin James in here too. He can give us some stories from the set. You know.
I cannot wait to watch that, but I'm also dreading it.
Yeah, it's gonna be this, like, is it gonna be a comedy? Like, I've never seen Kevin James be in anything that's not a comedy.
It's about Sean Payton, so it's got to be a joke.
That's fair. Yeah. That's totally fair. Yeah. All right. Well, I know everyone's itching for some draft takes, so let's get to some Senior Bowl talk. It's going to be next week, guys, starting on Tuesday. The practices are Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. The game will be on the weekend, but as everyone in the scouting community will tell you, nobody cares about the game. It's all about the practices. We do know it's going to be the Lions and Dan Campbell, you know, eating the kneecaps, or, you know, destroying the kneecaps. Dan Campbell will be one coach, and Robert Saleh of the Jets will be the other. So I think people are pretty excited to see the practices that these two guys run. I think it's going to be a lively atmosphere, to say the least. But yeah, Jake, I know you've been doing some work on these guys. There's so many top players coming this year, particularly in groups like Edge. Edge has a lot of the best players there. Quarterback also has like five of the top six guys. Anyone like who's right now like your top two or three guys that you're just like hoping to see have a great week at the Senior Bowl?
All right, I'm gonna do everybody here a favor, and I'm just not gonna cover any Georgia players because we'll be here all night. Some guy that I've been on for a couple weeks now, I'm kind of Amber Thomas at Ohio State is nuts. Like freakism, perfect build. And I love a lot of the guys on this American team. Jermaine Johnson falls into that category as well. And Channing Tindall out of Georgia. But I just saw him on my list, and I figured I'd talk about him because I don't think. But, man, he has the most incredible range I've ever seen out of a line with N'Kobe Dean. Like, he's like a – if you throw a tennis ball, man, he is straight to the ball every – he has incredible – everything – progress. I mean, he's an excellent special teams guy. Really starting a year or two at Mike or even at Sam.
Yeah. I you were cutting out just a little bit there, but yeah, I heard what you were saying. Yeah. Channing Tindall is definitely a guy I'm going to be looking at for sure. Quay Walker is a guy I like too, sort of like a late bloomer at Georgia, but he reminds me a lot of Devondre Campbell in that he's sort of like got more and more playing time throughout his career, has sort of like absurd measurables and athleticism. And, Devondre Campbell took a while to get going, but once he hit, you know, now like with the Packers, unfortunately not with Atlanta, turned into a great linebacker. So he's someone that's interesting to me. The linebacker class is sort of sneaky good at the Senior Bowl this year for sure. I agree with all the guys you mentioned. Dave, I don't know how much work you've done on the Senior Bowl, but, any players you're hoping to hear more about this week?
Good ones. I've put in zero work on the Senior Bowl. I am
just leaving
really,
it all to me. Yeah.
I'm catching up after you go. I am increasingly out of the draft game because we've got so many good folks on it, but I will catch up at some point. I know, you know, I'm actually very interested in Georgia players, but I will not belabor that either.
Yeah, there's a lot. Well, it's funny because there's so many, like both Quay Walker and Channing Tindall are going to be there. So there's going to be, you know, two of the three Georgia linebackers. Devontae Wyatt, the Georgia defensive tackle, will be there. Everyone's pretty hyped to see him. The only Georgia, you know, linebacker that's not going to be there is N'Kobe Dean, unfortunately. But the other two are going to, they're both on the same team as well. So that'll be fun. One guy that I definitely wanted to talk about that I feel like we maybe haven't really considered much for the Falcons' first pick, but I think we should, is Utah linebacker Devin Lloyd, who I finally was able to do my full report on, or at least, you know, my preliminary report because we don't have our testing yet. But Devin Lloyd, I think, is someone that fans should start thinking about at 8. And the reason for that is he's listed as a linebacker, and if you don't know much about him, you'd probably assume he's just a really big linebacker. But this is a guy that played a significant amount of his snaps as an edge rusher and was good. Like, he's a good edge rusher. Now, he's not going to be a permanent edge rusher in the NFL. He's like 6'3", you know, 235, 240. So he's not someone that you're going to be lining up on the edge and expecting to take on offensive tackles on the run game. But he played, you know, 33% of the time as an edge rusher. The other majority of the time he played as their Mike linebacker. And this year he actually became an asset in coverage. He's that rare linebacker that's actually better in man coverage than zone. Like, I thought he was a little bit timid in his zone drops and just didn't know where he was going, but you put him in man, he's a great athlete. He can match up on tight ends, running backs. He's just a phenomenal player. He's a great athlete, hard hitter, and he's got that pass rush juice. And I think, you know, I think depending on what happens ahead of the Falcons at 8, you know, I'd probably be looking to trade down, but you know, there's a non-zero chance that the top three edge guys are all gone. You know, Aiden Hutchinson, Thibodeau, almost certainly gone. You know, Karlaftis probably gone. You know, so then you're at the point, is it like, do I go after the fourth edge rusher in David Ajabo, who I haven't fully finished scouting yet? You know, I'm a little bit leery of Ajabo, just not that he's not worth a first round pick, but At eight, you know, if you're taking the fourth best player at a position at eight, I think you probably need to evaluate what you're doing. Like, is it really worth reaching for that guy? And I think if you want to get someone who can potentially, be a part-time pass rusher, but also fill another need for you and play a lot of linebacker, I think Devin Lloyd is someone that I would consider above Ajabo. Obviously not ahead of someone like Kyle Hamilton, who's such a special player. I would take Kyle Hamilton without hesitation at eight. And you all should want that. You should all be hoping that he falls to eight and makes it really easy on the Falcons. But there's a non-zero chance that like the two top offensive tackles are gone, the three top edges are gone, and the Falcons, you know, don't get a great offer to trade down, and they have to pick someone. Kyle Hamilton's not there. I think Devin Lloyd is someone we should consider for sure. Right now I would have Lloyd above Ajabo on my board. I think Draft Network has that as well. But it's someone that's something to monitor. That's not someone I really ever considered at eight, but I think it's somebody that we should start paying attention to. Have you done any work at all on Lloyd, Jake, or have you watched any of his game?
See, I haven't done any Lloyd work yet. I haven't done too many ones. Mainly, you know, like I kind of put it in the back burner a bit, and also like four, six. So I've seen plenty of them.
Yeah.
I've seen Dean, I've seen Ten Walker. And so that's a guy I haven't, but he's somebody that keeps popping up. Seeing, and I'm like, you know what, would they really climb back about it? He kind of sounds like, you know, probably not with the same athletic ability, but he sounds like somebody that did a lot of what Micah Parsons did for me.
Yeah, that is kind of, you know, he's not as high end as Micah Parsons in terms of Micah Parsons was just so freakish. Like he had he was up there with Kyle Pitts in terms of like most talented player in that class. And he's not quite there for me, but I think if you like Micah Parsons and you want, like, he's probably, I would say Lloyd is like 90% of Micah Parsons. He's not quite as big, but, and not quite as freak of an athlete, but he does a lot of the same stuff. You know, he can drop down and play pass rusher for you. He's a demon as a blitzer, but then you put him back at Mike linebacker and he's going to be a good Mike linebacker for you. You know, he can sift through traffic. He can run and chase. He can shed blocks. A lot of linebackers these days are too small to shed blocks. So he can. I think he does remind me a little bit of someone like Micah Parsons. Also kind of gave me some flashes of like a Dont'a Hightower, like a bigger, more traditional linebacker that also does, you know, go drop down and rush from the edge sometimes. So I think that's someone to watch, certainly, that we haven't really discussed much. Because I think if you want to add a pass rusher, but the top three edges are gone, you know, Devin Lloyd might be the one you go with, even though he's not a pure edge rusher. Yeah, I like DeMarvin Leal too. He seems like he's cooled off in terms of people's opinions, but he's up there with those guys for me in terms of people I would consider at eight. But there's a lot of other great players at the Senior Bowl this year. Wide receiver is one that I'm sort of watching closely just because, like, for all the things we talked about, right? Like, Calvin Ridley might be gone. Do they re-sign Russell Gage? They've got a lot of stuff to do there. I'll list off some of my guys for you folks, you good people out there on the interwebs. But like Alec Pierce is a guy I like a lot from Cincinnati. Bigger bodied receiver, sort of fits the bill of what Arthur Smith generally likes. You know, he likes those bigger bodied guys. In that same vein, guys like Jalen Tolbert and Romeo Doubs, guys that are absolute speed demons, deep threats, but also have that size, you know, to develop into a more well-rounded receiver. Also guys that are probably going to be there on, you know, late day two, which is important considering, I don't know if the Falcons can afford to drop like a first on a receiver. So they may have to get creative and add someone later. Running back is intriguing too. Any like wide receiver, offensive skill guys, Jake, that you're interested in potentially for the Falcons?
Yeah. Christian Watson, North Dakota State. Somebody turned me on to him recently. It may have been Eric. If it is Eric, full credit to him. But wow, I mean, he's a burner, and you got to, you know, understand the level of competition in the FCS. Obviously, James Cook. I don't have to harp on James Cook. He's got a lot of Alvin Kamara light in his game. And Trey McBride out of Colorado State. I think he just set the FBS record for receiving for tight ends. Don't fact check me on that. I'm not sure. but he did have a monster season. And of course, tight end could be a need. I would be open to bringing in a Mo Alie-Cox or a Bob Tonyan. But I mean, right now it's just Kyle Pitts really. And then maybe Parker Hess or some reserve contracts. And then the last guy I would say is Damian Pierce out of Florida, which I usually don't say nice things about Florida players. but Pierce doesn't have a ton of miles on his leg. He's a tough runner. He's a great pass blocker. And I think if he's a guy that's there in like the sixth round, I think he would definitely be worth a look.
Yeah. Yeah. I like all those names.
I do have to pause here for a second because I was promised a 1,000-word essay on James Cook. So.
Oh, yeah. Really... Okay. Please read it off. Yep. Yeah.
In the beginning.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, yeah, go ahead.
Look. James Cook, I don't think he will ever be Alvin Kamara, but I think he can give you a lot of things that Alvin Kamara gives you, especially as a receiver. I've watched safeties try to guard him. I've watched corners try to guard him. I've watched linebackers try to guard him. And not all of them have had that much success. And, you know, I think if you pair him with a really good quarterback in an offense that really focuses on getting running back the ball out of the backfield, I think he can give you, you know, Alvin Kamara light. You know, not saying he's going to be one of the five best running backs in the league, but he can give you that type of production.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, especially if the Falcons bring back Patterson, they don't necessarily need – like a bell cow. Like they can go out and get a compliment to Patterson. And someone like James Cook, I think is absolutely a guy that can be that compliment. That can take some of the carries off of Patterson's plate, which, you know, I think you'll certainly want him to take some carries, but like the 12 to 15 he was having to take some weeks is just not really his style. Like he's your matchup guy, you know, if and you use him sparingly to make the most of him. So I think you'd like to get someone in there to take a lot of those early down carries off his plate. So yeah, James Cook is absolutely someone I would watch for that. Hassan Haskins from Michigan too, I like a lot. Definitely in that Arthur Smith big boy mold. He's a big lad. He's a thick boy. So, also, like, just surprisingly, like, slippery for being huge. I was really impressed because I was watching, you know, other Michigan players like Aiden Hutchinson's other stuff, and you just like, oh, okay, let's see what this offense looks like. And Haskins just always pops. So he was somebody I liked. You also mentioned Trey McBride, who I actually have as tight end one. And you know, I think that's sort of a sneaky need and also potential pick that fans maybe aren't paying attention to, because I think at a certain point the Falcons might be like, look, we need an offensive weapon, who's the best on the board? And there's a non-zero chance, like late in the second round, that Titans pick, they're looking to add a weapon. Those top receivers are gone. They're like, you know who the best guy is right now is Trey McBride. And I think that shouldn't shock anyone, because we know Arthur Smith likes his two tight end sets. He didn't really get to unleash it with Hayden Hurst. It seemed like he didn't trust him. I don't know if it was because Hayden Hurst couldn't block or what, you know. But you know, you get Kyle Pitts, you get Trey McBride, who's a pretty good blocker too. You know, I wouldn't say he's like Lee Smith good yet, but someone who definitely has the frame and the want to get there. I think he's sort of an all around good tight end, and you pair him with Kyle Pitts and you got a really, really nasty 1-2 punch at tight end. So I do like that as well. Yeah, I mean, there's so many guys to watch. I mean, there's literally like seven edge guys I have written down. Like, I mean, I think it's just a huge class. So there's just, if you're looking for edge guys, you're going to hear a lot about them at the Senior Bowl. You know, cornerback, I think there's a pretty good group there too. Roger McCreary from Auburn, one of the top guys, he's going to be there. Darian Kendrick from Georgia will be there as well. So he's someone to watch, certainly. At safety, they've got Jaquan Brisker from Penn State, who's like, if it wasn't for Kyle Hamilton, he'd be like talked about as the top safety. He's totally legit. We already talked about Travis Jones from UConn. Fidarian Mathis from Alabama will be there too. I mean, there's a lot. Devontae Wyatt from Georgia, we mentioned. Like, there's a lot of great defensive linemen at the Senior Bowl. So there's just so many guys to watch. I mean, it's too many to cover in detail here, but the one class that I do want to sort of touch on before we get out of here, is the quarterback group, because it's rare, but they actually have, I think, five of the top six quarterbacks or top seven quarterbacks there. You know, they've got Pickett, they've got Ritter, they've got, Carson Strong, they've got Malik Willis. They even got Bailey Zappe. The only ones they don't have are Sam Howell and Matt Corral. Otherwise they have most of the top guys. And I'm curious, you know, I'm not an expert quarterback evaluator. I sort of just go with my gut with quarterback. But I'm curious, Jake, if you have any of these quarterbacks that you're sort of maybe sneakily interested in for the Falcons, not necessarily in the first round, but say somebody were to fall to the second round, maybe we have extra picks, you know, anything could happen.
I know you like Desmond Ridder, so I'll leave that to you. To be brutally honest, I hate them all. I don't hate them, but they all just have something about them that just makes my lip curl. There's always something with, and you know, it's one of those things to where it's a lot of guys that I thought were going to take a big step forward and really just haven't. I mean, Sam Howell's not there. I thought I would see a lot more improvement out of Sam Howell. Desmond Ridder, to a degree, he did play better, but I kind of thought he could have established himself as the first pick in the draft. And the same goes for Malik Willis. The only one that I truly actually like is Matt Corral, and I still have my issues with him, but he's not a Senior Bowl. Bailey Zappe is the one that's interesting to me because usually I'm a big, you draft quarterbacks based on traits. Do they have a big arm? You know, can they make plays with their feet? That would describe like Malik Willis. But guys don't throw 62 touchdowns on accident.
Right.
And I think he's definitely somebody to watch, especially if he can have a good week of practice this week. I think he can make himself some money and probably be maybe a second-round pick, third-round pick.
Yeah, I like Bailey Zappe. I think he's maybe the guy that has the most potential to like rise up draft boards because right now he's being looked at as like an early day three guy. But teams are desperate for quarterback, and if he really stands out and impresses, he could absolutely work his way into that day two conversation. And I agree with you that he's, you know, you don't just luck into record setting. Like there's something about you. It's not just, oh, it was a lower level of competition or this or that. Like something, you set those records for a reason. So, you know, I'm excited to see how he looks. You know, I used to be team Malik Willis, but like you, I'm just sort of like, he didn't grow this year. And that's a big concern to me. The reason I like Ridder more is because I think there was growth there. You know, certainly it wasn't growth into like the number one overall quarterback prospect. But, you know, to me, I just like his traits so much. And I like it in the second round because it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg to take that chance. And I like it behind Ryan. And I like it because I think Ridder matches up really well with what Arthur Smith wants. You know, he's not necessarily going to make him go through like five reads and, you know, read the whole field and do all this craziness. He's going to be like, okay, you're going to, you know, take a, you know, bootleg and you're check two reads. And then if it's not there, you take off. And Matt Ryan can't really take off. And that's a limitation in this offense for him, but Ridder can scoot, you know, no one's going to confuse him for Lamar Jackson or anything, but he's got some wheels to him. And, you know, I think he was let down by his receivers in that Alabama game, 'cause he threw some darts. But
that's what I was going to say is one thing I do like about Ridder is he went toe to toe with Alabama and he did not for a moment look like he was out of his league. You know, he didn't look scared. He didn't look like he didn't belong there. And that's something that I do think makes me a little bit more confident in him than some of these other guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I did mention it. I think it was last week, the week before, but I was listening to Draft Dudes and they had one of the quarterback gurus on there. I'm blanking on his name now. But Jordan Palmer, and he raved about Desmond Ridder as a guy that's been, you know, doing all these sort of off season training programs for years. And his attention to detail and like working on these little things that usually it takes, you know, guys in the league years to decide that are worth their time. You know, Ritter's a guy that's going to focus on those little mechanical things and getting better in those ways. And that to me stood out because I think a lot of these really talented quarterbacks don't realize until they get to the NFL that like, it's not enough to just be talented. Like you have to really perfect your craft. You have to grind and keep grinding. Like once you get drafted, it's just starting. So that gives me hope that he can continue to develop. And, you know, I love guys that every year you see their production and their play get better. And that's exactly what we have in Ridder, where he's, you know, decent freshman year, better sophomore year, good junior year, very good senior year. And I think those guys that improve every single year are more likely to continue that level of play. But all quarterbacks are total crapshoot, which is why I'm a fan of taking one in the second. Because if you hit on it, it's like, great. Now we, you know, can possibly trade Matt Ryan next year, have a whole boatload of picks, and really fix this roster. And if you don't like what you see, you know, go take somebody next year. Who cares? It's just a second-round pick that you probably got from a trade anyway. So, you know, much better than whiffing on someone at eight and being in the same boat. So But it's always tough with these guys.
It'll be fun to watch Malik Willis. Like, I don't like, I'm critical of him for many reasons, but like, I don't like dislike Malik Willis. I'm sure he's a good kid, but like, I like to describe him as 40% of Lamar Jackson. That's kind of what he is right now. And Hugh Freeze did not do him any favors. That offense was very much, you know, on time, RPO, pump fake here, throw across the middle. And you know, looking at his footwork and stuff, I can see that there's something there. And I don't doubt that he can be a great quarterback, but my instincts would say that he's probably more likely to not be a great quarterback, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wanted to love Malik so bad. Like, I was all in on him last year. Yeah, and I just, there wasn't growth. And obviously his offense didn't do many favors. And, like, to be fair, like, they did try to schedule, like, better teams for him to go against and showcase his talents. Like, they did do that effort, and I think it would have been easy to sort of hide him against that lower level of competition, and they didn't do that. Like, they tried to go out and schedule tougher teams for him to play, but the thing is, Liberty can't hang with SEC. Like, they can't hang with UNC or whatever. They can't do it. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, they don't have the talent up and down the field to look good. So it just, you know, there was opportunities there for him to shine against that competition, but I think the infrastructure around him wasn't doing him any favors. But he's just a huge wild card. And it's like, if he hits, you've got a potentially elite quarterback, but I just don't know how long it's going to be before you see that. I mean, it could be 2 to 3 years. And that far in, you know, you're losing your rookie contract advantage. And I just, you know, if Malik Willis was available like on day two last year, I think that would have been, you know, the Falcons probably, that would have been a great time to take him because he could sit behind Ryan for several years. But what it looks like right now is if they do take a quarterback on day two, this guy's probably, they're hoping he's going to play in 2023. So it's like, I don't know if that's enough time for someone like Willis to be ready.
Yeah. So, I was all over Ritter last draft cycle too, before he said he was coming back. And
yeah,
of course, with the way the last quarterback class went, with nobody really looking particularly that great, I'm sure three of these guys will be all pros, and I'll look like an idiot.
Of course, as always. Yeah, I hated Josh Allen, and, you know, I hated that pick. And, you know, Josh Allen made a lot of people look really stupid. But to be fair, he's like the one exception to the rule.
He's like one of like five guys who have ever had like a sub 50% completion percentage and then came to the NFL and improved. So
yeah, it's very unusual. So good process on our part, but, you know, wrong results. It happens sometimes. It happens. Happens to the best of us. But yeah, Dave, before we get out of here, just quick, your thoughts on, you know, I know you haven't necessarily scouted all these guys in depth, but in general, do you think this is a good year for the Falcons to consider maybe taking a quarterback, either in the first round or like later?
I think I would put it this way. If the hype cycle spins up over the next couple months and all of a sudden four or five of these guys are going in the first round, like it seems like happens every year, then no, it's a bad year. I wouldn't do it. If, you know, these guys are properly rated for a change and, you know, the NFL isn't jumping up and down, you have your choice of, you know, maybe a Willis, maybe a Ritter in the second round, then absolutely. You know, to your point, Kevin, like, you don't want to throw a second round pick away, but the Falcons have done that, first of all, quite a bit over the years. And second of all, like, to me, it's been important for years to try to get somebody behind Matt Ryan, not necessarily even because you think you're going to replace him, but if you turn out to have a terrific young quarterback, teams are going to be calling and offering you probably more than that second round pick to begin with. And you have a great fallback option for a guy who is on the wrong side of 35 at this point. So to me, you know, certainly with the extra pick, any other picks that they pick up through trades and so forth, yeah, this seems like a fine year to take a quarterback, as long as everybody doesn't go crazy. And honestly, I have absolutely no faith that they won't go crazy. So, you know, maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, you just never know. Things can happen. I like, at the end of the day, I do think Ritter will be a first round pick. I wouldn't be shocked if he has like the best week of any quarterback at the Senior Bowl, and then is just like all of a sudden vaulted into the conversation with Kenny Pickett for the top. You know, this is just how these things go. Like, quarterbacks tend to get pushed up. They always do. And, you know, like, I like Ritter at the end of the first round, early second round, but like, do I like him as much at eight? You know, I don't know. to me, like, he's the guy that I like the best of this group. You know, I probably like Matt Corral better overall as a prospect, but in terms of like where I think they're going to go, you know, I think that the value and the possibility at the early second for Ritter is perfect to me. But I don't think at eight you consider it like at all. I don't think anyone is. I think you're reaching, especially if Ryan's your starter this year. Like, there's no need to force it there. Now, if they trade down, everything's on the table after a trade down. I mean, all bets are off, but we'll see. Yeah, Corey, I got you, bro. We're going to read your tip right now. Yeah, so we got Corey Carter with the $5 just came in. Thank you so much, Corey. Appreciate that, man. He says, so if Karlaftis, Neil, Hamilton, Leal, and Hutchinson are gone, I would like to trade back, maybe even all the way out of the first to get more seconds and thirds to get a bunch of guys like Pickens, James Cook, Smoke Monday, Charlie Kolar, Pierce, Alec Lindstrom, Calvin Austin, Max Mitchell, and Ford. Just give me all these guys. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to trade all the way out of the first. That sort of move, I don't know how they would actually orchestrate that. But, like, you know, I could see them going down to Pittsburgh at 20 if Pittsburgh's trying to jump up for a quarterback. That's probably the most likely big move that they would make in terms of, like, the biggest trade down. Other, like, I traded down with Washington in a mock to 11. I think that's possible. You know, Cleveland is always a sleeper candidate because they might decide, like, it's time to move on from Baker. But, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think if those top guys are gone, I think the Falcons, will, their first choice may be, you know, obviously they're going to be like, okay, if these players are here, X, Y, and Z, we're going to take them, no question. But if these players are gone, and probably two of those players are Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeaux, and it's like they're not going to be there, so you can not worry about that. But, like, you know, Kyle Hamilton would be, for me, like, someone I would take without question and not consider a trade down. But after that, like, if Evan Neal and Ikem Ekwonu and those top three edge guys and Kyle Hamilton are gone, which is pretty likely, I would be working the phones. Like, that would be, I would be trying to trade down first. You know, we'll just have to see, because it takes two to trade down. You can't just, like, magically want it to happen and, you know, it just picks a peer for you. Like, you have to have someone that wants to move up for some reason. The easiest reason is always a quarterback, right? But we don't know who's going to have their quarterbacks filled in free agency. We don't know where guys are going to move around. It's early to say, but I do think a trade down is pretty likely. And we know this regime, I think, is more open to trading down than the previous one. Like, I think they have almost as many, with that one trade down they did in the second round last year, I think they almost have as many trade downs as Dimitroff did in his entire tenure. Which I'm not sure. I mean, I think he did one, two, maybe the entire time.
I think two. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Dimitroff didn't like to trade down. And Dimitroff was wrong about that, but, you know, Dimitroff was a little too heavy on the other side, perhaps. You know, no, obviously the Julio one was a good move, but a little too aggressive most of the times instead of letting the draft come to him. And I think what we're seeing with all these teams that tend to be really good at the draft, like Baltimore, is the secret to the draft is just having more picks. You know, having more darts to throw results in a better outcome. Who would have thought? You know, it's a lot of way to go here. I think we will see the Falcons get extra picks, whether that's from the player trades we mentioned or a trade down. Still not sure, but they're not done yet. They're also likely to get a sixth round comp pick. It's not official yet, but I think they're going to get one for Alex Mack. At least that's what's projected right now. So they will have that extra pick almost certainly. Obviously, that'll be like pick 200 or something. So, you know, don't get too excited, but, you know, they'll have an extra pick there. Probably one from a Deion Jones trade if that happens. Probably a good one from a Calvin Ridley trade if that happens. Then if you trade down, you know, you're talking about 10 plus picks. And then you're like, oh, are all these guys going to make the roster? So, you know, we're looking at an offseason that could go in very different directions. It's still very early. It's fun. But got a long way to go. And happy to enjoy it all with you guys. There's a lot to discuss going forward, but this is a great start, especially for free agency. And I want to thank tonight's guests for contributing to this great discussion. First of all, we had Jake Gordon from Sports Talk ATL. He is at Can't Guard Jake on the Twitters. Jake, anything you'd like to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, I'm doing my free agency big boards right now, but I love doing draft stuff. Am I cutting out again?
No, no, you're good now.
Okay, cool. I was just blinking on my thing. I didn't know if it was, but I do a lot of draft stuff. That's kind of my thing, NFL draft. So yeah, just be on the lookout for that. I don't go overboard with it, but I indulge in the occasional mock draft. So I'll do those from time to time, especially yes. like if a Calvin Ridley trade happens, they get an extra first. Like obviously that's the first thing I'm going to do. So.
Oh yeah. 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 No, I'm a degenerate that does like, I'd probably do one every week if I had time, but they take a while. So I do it every 2 weeks now, but I don't blame you, for either wanting to do a million or only wanting to do a couple, because everyone's got takes when you put out a mock draft. So everyone has an opinion. So it's always exciting, but thanks for coming on, man. We'll definitely get you back on over the course of the off season. Glad we could finally make it.
Yeah. Thank you all for having me, man. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm glad. Glad.
Always great to see Davey's beautiful face, too.
Yes, hashtag Dave Meat, folks. Speaking of...
Every time.
I only do it because it drives you crazy. That's the only reason.
You think it drives me crazy, but when I look in the mirror later, I'll see it, too.
He is Dave Choate, folks. The man, the myth, the legend. At the Falcoholic. Also has non-football takes at Words and Beer. Dave, anything you would like to plug, anything else going on before we get out of here?
Yeah, just, I think I like to think we're putting out a lot of great off-season content, looking a lot at free agents coming up. Obviously, Kevin Everett and the gang doing great work on the draft side and just trying to figure out where this thing is going. I'm sure we'll be wrong about all of it, but we'll try to give you a comprehensive look at what they could do at the very least.
Yes. It's always fun because there's so many possible outcomes and our hearts haven't been broken yet. I'm sure they will be in time, but for now, hope springs eternal at this point in the off season. Guys, again, thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for all your donations tonight. We're getting very close to our goal. We've still got next week to get all that cut up. I will be coming to you. The plan right now is for me to come to you guys every day after practice. We will have to see the recording situation, if I can do it from the stadium or if I have to go back to the hotel. So that might affect when the shows will actually go live. But, look forward to that. Wednesdays we might just fold it in with the normal live show. But either way, lots of Senior Bowl takes coming your way. Allegedly, I can tweet out up to 2 minutes of video. So I'm going to have to be judicious with which clips I share, but I'm going to take a lot of video and, you might have to wait to see it because I have to actually be careful about what I share. But so we will have that, guys. Again, thank you so much for your support. Really appreciate that. Super excited to go down there. Thanks to Dave and the crew at the site for working overtime to try to get this covered too. Really appreciate that as well. And again, thanks for my great guests tonight. And guys, we will have more stuff coming on the Patreon as well. There was going to be a Q&A this week. It's going to be hard to make it work with the travel and everything else. So I think I'm just going to do one probably immediately following the Senior Bowl. That way you guys can get questions in about that. So look for that next week. Also going to do my first polls for the Patreon page about which prospects you want me to write up scouting reports on first. So you guys have the power to determine, who the first edges are that come out. So look for that. And we're going to have some more polling and other stuff like that about potential off-season videos and guests you guys want us to try to get on. We want to give you guys that are supporting us month to month more of a say in, what sort of stuff we're bringing in, the direction you guys would like to see the show go. So keep tuned for that. If you're not involved with that already, it's patreon.com/FalcoholicLive where you can sign up to get exclusive perks and all that good stuff. Like and subscribe if you haven't done all that already. And once again, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next week for all that Senior Bowl content and more. Until then, guys, have a great night. We will see you next time. Talk to you later, folks.